Good morning, and everyone, just go ahead and mute your lines if you would. Good morning, and welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. My name is Larry Kay from Chicago, and I'll be the host for the presentation this morning. Today is Sunday, September 1st, oh my gosh, 2024. And the share ID numbers I'll give you for Friday, August 30th, for the 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting, that number is 21,702. That's 21702. For the 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting on Friday, 21703. 21703. This morning, A Vision for You presents, Provided We Remain Willing. So what our speaker is going to do is she's going to elaborate on portions of chapter 2, There Is a Solution. She's going to share her experience, strength, and hope, and you kind of fill in some of the themes within that chapter as well. So allow me to offer some very specific personality traits of a subset of human beings, right? So here you go. Highly impulsive, irresponsible, manipulative, self-centered, in constant need of stimulation. They can be deceptive and dishonest, lacking the capacity for empathy or compassion. They may have a very heightened sensitivity to perceived offenses, you know, combined with a diminished capacity to regulate their emotions. And there's also a tendency to isolate and alienate themselves from others. And then we see often repeated patterns of poor judgment and sometimes a deeply rooted sense of self-loathing is buried deep, right? So what I just described are the very well-researched traits of a psychopath. You'll find them in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, which is a reference book used by mental health professionals. And I you know, not to quote per se an outside resource, but just to make a contextual point about our text. But it helps folks diagnose those living like myself with various psychopathologies, right? And I don't know about you, but what struck me when I look at this was that this is precisely the same inner experience of many compulsive overeaters like me, right? Eating or not. Before finding and growing towards a spiritual solution or not. So, in fact, the only difference really between a compulsive overeater and this definition of this psychopathic, you know, behavior is that a compulsive overeater doesn't, you know, when we're compulsive overeating, this doesn't give them, the psychopath, any relief, you know, by bringing about ease and comfort for this inner turmoil, like it does for us. You know, no wonder why, you know, psychopaths often end up in jail. They do. There's nothing that can numb them from the inner turmoil. See, for me, I can eat to anesthetize myself from that insane thinking that the big book talks about. And then it occurred to me that when we prevent new members of OA from getting into the steps right away, This state of mind is still going on inside their heads, except that the only thing that has ever helped them with this inner discomfort, this unmanageability, as we call it, has been taken away, right? And that's the food. And I really think it's something to think about, something for me to think about for sure. And I sometimes start a big book retreat by reading the above quote without saying, you know, who they're talking about, and then asking if anyone in the room like me does not relate to that. You know, and when I reveal what it describes and where I got it from, I've had some pretty interesting responses, and people are nice, and I hope it's opened some eyes, because the big book calls it, as you know, a spiritual malady. That's what we have if we identify in with this, a spiritual malady. And the spiritual malady is sometimes called, you know, they refer to it as untreated alcoholism. Whether we're drinking or not, these are manifestations of being blocked off spiritually, whether I'm eating or not. And they're basically caused by things, as I learned, like self-centered fear, you know, selfishness, self-centeredness that we think is the root of our troubles, page 62. You know, but remember, you know, when the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically, page 64. And that's why if we just stop eating and don't grow spiritually, our inner life gets worse, right? Because we haven't dealt with the root problem yet, the spiritual malady. The difference really between a problem eater and a compulsive overeater is that when the food is taken away from the problem eater, I've seen problem eaters, they get the food taken away by their doctor or, maybe a partner in a sense. You know, with them, the problem goes away. You take the food away, the problem goes away. But when the food is taken away from the compulsive overeater like me, guess what? The problem just begins. It's just starting. And one of the things that I had to finally discover was I do not have the power to be what it is I'd like to be, no matter how much I wish to be that way. I don't have the power. And the conflict that arises as a result of having, you know, the grandest of intentions, but not having the power to live up to those intentions, what that does, it creates more discomfort for me, more than I can bear. And so the compulsive overeater has no choice. And when I get into a conflict like that, unrecovered, ultimately, I have to eat. I'm biologically mandated to eat. You know, if my life is lived in such a way that I can't stand it, and I don't like the truth about who I am, then I have to have some kind of solution for that. And the solution was simply to eat. It was absolutely necessary to take the first bite over and over and over again. So really, unless I can experience an entire psychic change, the book tells me, there is little hope that I'm ever going to recover. If you can't handle eating and you can't handle not eating, then perhaps OA is the place for you. Now joining us this morning to share her experience, strength, and hope is Katie B. from New York. And Katie is a dedicated member of Overeaters Anonymous. She's committed to the practice and the teaching of the 12 steps and 12 traditions as a way of life. And so please join me with great generosity in welcoming Katie B. to the line. Good morning, Katie.
Hey, good morning, Larry. Can you hear me okay?
I can. You're coming through terrific. Thanks, Katie.
Great. Okay. Well, hi. Good morning. I am Katie B. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. And I want to thank Larry, and I want to thank everybody else who makes this meeting possible, I'm grateful for all the service of all the people here that help carry this message, and I just want to express my gratitude. And Larry, thank you. As you were listing the character traits, I was jotting a couple down. I didn't grab all of them, but I was like, yep, impulsive, manipulative, highly sensitive, difficulty regulating emotions, deeply rooted in self-loathing. I was like, check, 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 check. And how interesting that those are characteristics of a psychopath. And I will say that a lot of the traits have left me, have been, the self-loathing, I will say, is the one that is huge. It was, my whole life was self-loathing, and that is gone. So thank you, God. But there's still a lot of stuff here, you know, like I can be sensitive and I can be impulsive still. And I'm so grateful that I have a program and steps to help me live life. so, yes. All right. So I am going to share on Chapter 2, There is a Solution. The title of the share is taken from a line from pages 26 and 27 in that chapter, and There is a Solution that says, he can go anywhere on this earth where other free men may go without disaster, provided he remains willing to maintain a certain simple attitude. So provided we remain willing, provided I remain willing, then I can go anywhere without disaster. And I guess what I hope my share will touch on is the willingness, disaster, right? and what that simple attitude is. And I hope to share that through parts of my story as a compulsive overeater. And page 29, the end of There Is a Solution, says, "We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women desperately in need will see the page, will see these pages, and we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that they will be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing." And I want to express gratitude to all of the others who have been willing to share about themselves. And I was finally persuaded to say, yes, I must have this thing also. And I remember, I think the first time I heard about a vision meeting, I don't know, maybe it was like in 2016, 2015, and somebody told me, oh, there's this morning meeting. I was at a regular in-person meeting, and they told me the meeting and the time of the meeting, and I was like, nope, I'm not doing that, because I wasn't ready. And then when I finally started listening to Vision, and also taking the steps by listening to other, going to other big book meetings, and just the gratitude that Vision for You is here. And I remember, like, when I would first listen, like, I was too scared to, like, say my name on the line. And I'm just so grateful for everybody that's here and that's a part of this and that's willing to be here. So going to the beginning of There Is a Solution, page 17, we of Alcoholics Anonymous know thousands of men and women who were once just as hopeless as Bill. Nearly all have recovered. They have solved the drink problem. So I guess I just want to try to talk a little bit about how I was hopeless and what it was like. So I went to my first Overeaters Anonymous meeting, I think sometime in the 90s, mid-90s maybe. I was a teenager, and I was out of the rooms way more than I was in. And until I finally surrendered, I guess is the right word, and was willing, in November of 2019, so all those years from the 90s until 2019, my life was constant food thoughts, constant thoughts about weight, what I looked like, dieting, what I was going to eat when I was ready to binge, when I was in a binge mode. It was what I was going to eat, how I was going to eat it, where I was going to sneak it, and when I was, dieting, then restricting what I wasn't going to eat, how long would it take me to lose X amount of weight by not eating this and restricting that. And I was pretty miserable, right? Like Larry said, that self-loathing. I just hated myself, and I hated other people too. And on the outside, I think I seemed okay, but underneath, there was just always like this yuckiness. Even on really good days, right, days that were celebratory, it was always like, oh, it'll be better if, or it'll be better when, and just really disliking myself. And, talk about hopeless, and this obviously isn't going to be part of everybody's story, but it's part of mine, so I'm going to share it. I had a heart attack, okay, in October of 2018. And when I had a heart attack, I was 38 years old, and my doctor told me that I had to, not had to, but he lovingly suggested that I needed to lose some weight and I needed to cut out certain types of food out of my diet, and that I could actually live a healthy, generally, a healthier life, and that my prognosis was good, but I certainly needed to make some lifestyle changes. And I have a genetic condition that was part of this. It wasn't just because I wasn't eating well that I had a heart attack, just to be clear. So I vowed that day in the hospital bed. I mean, I had heart failure. I was in a heart failure unit of a big hospital for a week. It was a big deal, right? It was a big deal. And I swore that day that I was going to change my ways. And I meant it. I meant it. I meant it. I ordered a treadmill from my hospital bed. And if you put me on a lie detector that day, I would have passed, that I was never going to eat certain foods again and that I was going to change my lifestyle. Well, I didn't. So I had a heart attack in October of 2018, right? Let's do some math. And I did not, I guess we call it become food sober, become abstinent, and begin this recovery journey until November of 2019. So that wasn't enough. That did not beat me into a state of reasonableness enough. I had to try again my own way for another year plus. And just the insanity of my life, like, I kept trying, I kept failing over and over and over and over and over again. And even though, you know, I hated myself and I felt pretty miserable, I guess I wasn't hopeless yet, because I thought that I could figure this out. I thought that I could outsmart it or out-diet it, or I don't know what I thought, but I kept fighting, right? I kept fighting it myself, thinking that I was going to fix it. So I wasn't out of hope. And when I finally admitted that I was hopeless or powerless, you know, in step one, that was the beginning of my recovery journey. And the gift of admitting that I'm hopeless, right, that I'm out of ideas, what a gift. And, you know, page 17 also says, you know, we nearly all have recovered. So what does it mean to be recovered? And, you know, from the big book, it tells us we've recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. So I don't feel hopeless anymore. I don't feel hopeless bodily or mentally. And I feel that I can go anywhere. I know that I can go anywhere a free man goes, free person goes, without disaster. So let me see, page 18 into 19. That the man who is making the approach has had the same difficulty, that he obviously knows what he is talking about, that his whole deportment shouts at the new prospect that he is a man with a real answer, that he has no attitude of holier than thou, nothing whatever except the sincere desire to be helpful, that there are no fees to pay, no axes to grind, no people to please, no lectures to be endured. These are the conditions we have found most effective. After such an approach, many take up their beds and walk again. So no holier than thou, right? I don't feel that I am in some superior place, right? Because now this has been removed from me. I don't get the credit. And as I think about the holier than thou, I start to think about, like, my misadventures with compulsive overeating, right, over the years. So, like, and I can laugh at myself, and I hope nobody finds these in bad taste, but I remember being, I must have been in my early 20s, and I was doing, I think it was the Atkins diet. It was something where you couldn't have any sugar, right? So a friend and I were going camping with her whole family, and we found sugar-free chocolate, and we bought bags and bags and bags of this sugar-free, you know, solution, right, that we were going to be able to eat this on the camping trip and be fine. And I don't know who has ever binged on this particular type of, I mean, I don't know if they make it anymore. It was like 25 years ago, I guess, but this type of sugar-free, but whatever they did to that food to manipulate it, to make it palatable, not to be gross, but it was real, like, rustic camping, and I spent an entire night in an outhouse. I remember holding a flashlight and being in an outhouse with all the spiders in the whole earth, like, with me in the outhouse, and going, and the noises that were coming out of that bath, it was so mortifying, and, like, we were laughing at least, but, like, the whole family heard, and, like, what, like, misadventures, like, I, and, like, so embarrassing, the things that I have done and been a part of in my compulsive eating. And then, you know, of course, like, that's funny, but it's sadder than that, right, in a lot of ways. And then I have another memory also with chocolate. There's a running theme in my shares, in my life experience, I guess. But I remember I had to get my kids off the bus and I was coming home from work, and it was like a 100-degree day, and I had on a brand new dress, and I'm racing to get the kids off the bus, but not racing too fast because there's an ice cream stand on the way home. So I stop and I pick up this ice cream and I am eating it, and it is melting so fast. I guess I had the air conditioner on, but it didn't even matter. It was melting so fast as I was like racing now to pick them up, and it's running down my arms, it's running down my face, all down my dress. Like the whole front of my dress is covered, right, in brown. And I'm not a normal, right? I don't know what a normal person would have done, maybe thrown it out, or I don't know, but I would never think of doing that. So, of course, I finish it as I get home, and the kids, you know, the bus is like pulling up. I don't have a chance to run in and change. And I remember I had files on the seat next to me, and I like grabbed all these files and I held them. I like configured them in front of my body to sort of like try to hide all of this. The brown was just down the whole front of this dress, and I had to like, you know, hold them in front of me while the kids got off the bus because I looked ridiculous, right? So that's another one that came to mind. And then one, you know, circling back to when I was in the hospital with that heart attack, my family had brought me, because of course they did, right, brought me food, because that's what you bring somebody in the hospital. And I had little nibbles in front of them, and I ate, you know, politely in front of them. And then it was the end of the night, and visiting hours were over. And I binged on what they had brought me in my hospital bed. After, remember that whole swearing, you know, things would be different, and I would never do it again. I actually binged in my hospital bed, and a family member came to visit me, and they let him in, even though it was after visiting hours. And he walked in, and there I was, like, oh, so mortifying, so shameful. And I couldn't stop. I couldn't stop. So then we go on, and it says on page 20, how many times people have said to us, I can take it or leave it alone, why can't he? Then why don't you drink like a gentleman or quit? That fellow can't handle his liquor. Why don't you try beer and wine? Lay off the hard stuff. His willpower must be weak. He could stop if he wanted to. Ooh, that was a good one, right? She's such a sweet girl. I should think he'd stop for her sake. The doctor told him that if he ever drank again, it would kill him, but there he is, all lit up again. Now, these are commonplace observations on drinkers we hear all the time. Back of them is a world of ignorance and misunderstanding. We see that these expressions refer to people whose reactions are very different from ours. So the world of ignorance and misunderstanding certainly was from other people, but really it was also from years of my own misunderstanding of my problem, right? Where it says his willpower must be weak. Before I understood the doctor's opinion, oh, and by the way, read the doctor's opinion, because I didn't like the book, first of all. I didn't like the big book. I certainly didn't want to read the doctor's opinion. It wasn't even a chapter, right? Who reads like the forwards and all the stuff before the chapters? I wasn't willing to do that. But when I finally did, right, I learned that it's not that my willpower is weak. I thought it was my fault. I thought I could control this if I really wanted to, or if I was stronger, or if I were more willing. And when I learned that I have an illness, that once certain alcoholic substances, right, my alcoholic foods enter my body, or if I partake in certain alcoholic food behaviors, then I'm going to have an abnormal reaction, and the phenomenon of craving will occur, and I can never safely partake, right? Where it says, like, oh, drink like a gentleman. Like, that's what I wanted. I wanted to eat like a gentleman or a lady, whatever, you know. I wanted to have a take-it-or-leave-it attitude, and my goal was moderately eating my alcoholic foods, and that goal had to be smashed. That wasn't going to work for me. And there's this great, I'm going to jump to the back of the book because I just love this one line. On page 427, this person goes to an AA meeting and they hear a speaker say, The speaker said, if you're an apple, you can be the best apple you can be, but you can never be an orange. I was an apple, all right. For the first time, I understood that I had spent my life trying to be an orange. I looked around at a room filled with apples, and if I was understanding the speaker, most of them were no longer trying to be oranges. And I just love that because I've been trying to be a moderate eater. I've been trying to be an orange, and that never worked, and it never will for me. There are certain things that I cannot safely eat in moderation. I can be the happiest apple. I can be the happiest, freest, compulsive overeater in the world. I'm going to be a pretty miserable orange because I'm not an orange, right? I'm not, and that's what I was fighting all along. So page 21 says, but what about the real alcoholic? At some stage of his drinking career, he begins to lose all control of his liquor consumption once he starts to drink. And that's where I was. I was the real alcoholic with food, right? I had a genuine fear of dying. I had a genuine fear that my children would grow up without their mom. And it didn't matter. I ate for another year plus. Fighting it, I fought, but that was the point. I fought. It was a losing battle when I was fighting the battle. Page 22, why does he behave like this? If hundreds of experiences, maybe thousands, right, have shown him that one drink means another debacle with all its attendant suffering, so much suffering and humiliation, why is it he takes that one drink? Why can't he stay on the water wagon? What has become of the common sense and willpower that he still sometimes displays with respect to other matters? Uh-oh, this is the part I don't like, right? Perhaps there never will be a full answer to these questions. Opinions vary considerably as to why the alcoholic reacts differently from normal people. We are not sure why. Once a certain point is reached, little can be done for him. We cannot answer the riddle. Oh, man. I don't like that. I want to answer the riddle. I want to know the why. I want to go to therapy, which is wonderful. It has its place. Self-help books, great. They're fantastic, right? I went to eating disorder clinics, life coaches. All of these have merit and value. But I was looking for the why because I thought if I found the reason why, I could solve the problem. But I can't, right? I can't. Let's see. So, page 23. These observations would be academic and pointless if our friend never took the first drink, thereby setting the terrible cycle in motion. Therefore, the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than his body, right? Like what Larry had mentioned, my impulsivity, my high sensitivity, my difficulty regulating emotions, my deep-rooted self-loathing, right? All that stuff in my mind. My mind telling me that this time will be different. My mind telling me that somehow I will manage better. I have in my life dieted or restricted down to a goal weight. I have in my life abstained from certain foods. But then my mind, there it goes again, telling me that I can have that food again, that, you know, enough time has elapsed or enough space between me and that food behavior and that this time it will be different. The bottom of 23 says, the tragic truth is that if the man be a real alcoholic, the happy day may not arrive. He has lost control. At a certain point in the drinking of every alcoholic, he passes into a state where the most powerful desire to stop drinking is of absolutely no avail. The tragic situation, this tragic situation has already arrived in practically every case long before it is suspected, right? I lost control. How many times have I sworn off and meant it? How many times, you know, I wanted it more than anything. You know, how many times have I stopped for good? How many Monday mornings have I sworn this is the time? How many bathing suit seasons have come and gone? you know, the beginning of, New Year's resolutions. Oh, by bathing suit season, you know, and then how many bathing suit seasons do I not get in a bathing suit? Oh, maybe next year. It never gets better. It only gets worse, okay? So that was my experience. And then we come to page 25, right? There is a solution. Almost none of us liked the self-searching, the leveling of our pride, the confession of shortcomings, which the process requires for its successful consummation. Okay, self-searching, leveling of pride, confession of shortcomings. What is this? These are the steps, right? I mean, really all of them are encompassed, I think, in some shape or form by this sentence, right? Really, 3, 4, 2, all of them, right? starting with admitting, you know, my hopelessness and you know, admitting maybe there's something out there more than me because I can't do this, and you know, the steps, you know, the 4, 5, 6, 7, all of it, looking at myself with this new lens, the willingness to see my part in things, the willingness to be willing to be rid of these things, right? You know, the leveling of pride, you know, on many levels, I didn't think I was a proud person. I hated myself. What are you talking about? I'm not proud. But really, I see now that I was too proud, you know, on some levels to admit defeat, maybe. I was too proud to accept help if the help was going to be spiritual help, right? Because I think I was too proud for God in a lot of ways. I had I was pretty angry. I was, you know, I kind of wavered between anger at God and disbelief in God. Those were my kind of extremes. Often there was no middle for me. So, continuing 25, when therefore we are approached, were approached by those in whom the problem had been solved, there was nothing left for us but to pick up the simple kit of spiritual tools. I'm going to read for a bit because it's so good, I can't help myself. Sorry. There was nothing left for us but to pick up the simple kit of spiritual tools laid at our feet. We have found much of heaven, and we have been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. So true, by the way, because my dream was just to be thin. I would take thin and miserable. I thought that was the best I could ever have, you know, because thin felt so impossible. But I mean, beyond what I've ever dreamed, I don't even care what I look like anymore, and that was all I cared about. So it's just so crazy and upside down, you know. The great fact is just this and nothing less, that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude toward life, toward our fellows, and toward God's universe. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could never do by ourselves. Last part, I promise. If you are as seriously alcoholic as we were, we believe there is no middle-of-the-road solution, which, by the way, I loved no middle-of-the-road solutions. I loved extremes, right? I was binging. I was dieting. I was on the wagon. I was off the wagon. I was black. I was white, right? Like, sure, give me something extreme. Give me something where I have to drink lemon juice for a month. I'm in, right? Like, I loved it, right? Okay, here we go. So what is it? We were in a position where life was becoming impossible, check, and if we had passed into the region from where there is no return through human aid, we had but two alternatives. One was to go on to the bitter end, blotting out the consciousness of our intolerable situation as best we could, and the other to accept spiritual help. Well, for a long time, decades, I said thanks but no thanks to spiritual help. Pass. I'll keep figuring this out on my own. Thanks but no thanks. I really wasn't interested. I remember I was at this meeting, and this, you know, I don't know, I was 20 maybe at the time, and another young girl, probably around the same age as me, started talking about her spiritual malady. And I was like, what? I would just like to be thin, please. Like, what are you talking about? It wasn't for me. I wasn't ready until I was ready. You know, I didn't know what she was talking about. I didn't care what she was talking about. I wanted to lose weight. I did not want to talk about God. I didn't want to rely on God. You know, I was so turned off by hearing this woman talk about God and spirit. It just wasn't for me at the time. And, you know, the book then references us to, or, you know, sends us to page 567 in the spiritual experience, and it tells us about the spiritual experience and, you know, the idea of God consciousness, and warns us of, you know, contempt prior to investigation. And that was me, you know. As I said, I was mad at God, or I didn't believe in God. I was annoyed by religious people. I was annoyed by spiritual people. I didn't want what you were selling. It turned me off, frankly. So at some point, though, I was beaten into a sense of reasonableness and was willing to take the steps. I was willing to be willing, right? And I was willing to be open-minded, and I was willing to be honest, right? So honest that I could not do this, that I could not fix this. Despite having, you know, capabilities, you know, to do other things in my life, to accomplish things, I was out of ideas. And what a gift that hopelessness was, and that honesty about my hopelessness, combined with the open-mindedness and willingness to take these steps, you know, read this book. And I just, again, want to just express my gratitude to other fellows and people in program who helped me, you know, who shared. I loved listening, and I still do love listening to other people's voices share on this book and these steps, because sometimes I hear it in a voice in a way that I get it now. Like, you know, there's just so many different ways to hear people's experiences on the steps and on the readings. And sometimes, I mean, they're all great, right? But sometimes I hear it in that way that I'm like, oh, okay, I get this now. And I'm so grateful that people are willing to do that. So I'm just checking how am I doing on time. All right. So then we go on to this certain American businessman, and that's the bottom. This starts on 26 and then goes down to the bottom and up to the top of 27, and it says essentially, he can go anywhere on this earth where other free men may go without disaster, provided he remains willing to maintain a certain simple attitude. So I understand this to mean that provided that I remain willing, then I can be free. And what does freedom look like, right? So freedom to me looks like and feels like food neutrality. You know, when sometimes those same psychopathic behaviors or feelings, rather, or traits sort of shine through. If I'm feeling impulsive, if something does offend me, if I'm feeling highly sensitive, right? I don't have to, and not only do I not have to, but I don't feel called at all, to seek out food as a solution. It's gone, and I didn't do that. I didn't do that. My higher power did that. So that is the freedom, that in all situations in my life, I am free from the food calling me. So there's that food neutrality. And then sometimes I have mood neutrality. Not all the time. but that's sort of like the rest of my life now is leaning into God, working with others, leaning into this program, and working towards feeling peaceful. Well, not working towards feeling peaceful, working on relying on God, and that reliance gifts me peace. So what is the simple attitude, right? It says willing to accept spiritual help. So I did become willing to accept spiritual help. And now, you know, it says, tells me ideas, emotions, and attitudes, which were once the guiding forces of my life, have been cast aside. And that is true. You know, my life is very similar, and also my life is very different. I just feel this freedom and this peace. And again, not 100% of the time. My life is not perfect. But what am I willing to do today? And my willingness comes and goes, because again, there's no perfection here, but I'm willing to turn my life over. I'm willing to take the steps. I'm willing to accept that I have an allergy. I'm willing to be willing to believe in a higher power. That's all I needed in the beginning. I will tell you now, full disclosure, someone who says I didn't have any interest in God or believe in God, and all I needed was to be willing to believe that maybe there was a God. And now, 5 years later, God is absolutely everything in my life. Everything. And my whole, which again, like, I would be rolling my eyes if I heard somebody saying this 5 years ago and now I am saying it. That's it for me. You know, continuing to develop a reliance on God and a relationship with God, and to seek out God and to seek to be led by God is my whole life now. And that doesn't mean to say that that's all I do. Like, you know, I get out of my house, I live my life, but I try to do it through this God consciousness. Am I willing to believe that my problem centers in my mind still, right? Remembering who sometimes, you know, parts about me that are very deep-rooted. I remain willing to continue my step work, right? Continue in this work. I remain willing to work with others. I remain willing to continue my prayer and meditation life. I remain willing to remain open and honest. And that's how for today. And I feel confident that this is going to be my truth, again, provided I remain willing to maintain this certain simple attitude of God consciousness, God reliance, that humility, that right-sized part of me, because a lot of the times, you know, when I'm feeling restless, irritable, discontented, it's because it's me. I am playing God, you know, and that's really what I was doing my whole life. I didn't realize it. I didn't label it that, but I had an agenda. I had a way I thought things should be. I had a way I thought you should be. I had a way I thought I should be. And when things didn't go that way, it made me upset or agitated, and then I didn't know what to do with those feelings, and so I would eat over them. And I think I ate for many more reasons than that. You know, I ate because I was happy. I ate because it was Thursday. I ate, you know, didn't, but that was part of it. And so, you know, the disaster, when it talks about I can go anywhere without disaster, it doesn't mean to me that I can go anywhere and nothing bad will happen, right? Because life is life. But what disaster to me means in this context is thinking that I got this. What disaster to me means is when I start thinking I'm God again. Things are not going to go well when I play God. I'm not particularly good at it. And when I'm trying to run the show and I don't continuously remind myself of who is actually running the show, it's a disaster. So just, I think it was this week, maybe last week. So another thing that, like, has happened as a result of the steps and recovery, right, is so now my family says grace before dinner, right? We sit and we say grace before dinner. And, like, within the last 10 days, and we rotate who does it, right? So everybody kind of takes a turn depending. But so my husband said grace, and instead of, like, oh, I don't know, being grateful that, you know, our family is moving towards a God consciousness, or being grateful for the food that we were about to eat, or grateful for togetherness, or for our health, or our safety, whatever, I criticized his prayer. I criticized the way that my husband thanked God. and I, so, you know, that's a disaster. That is, like, are you kidding me? What's going on? And what's going on is I'm still trying to run the show. I want to control everything down to the way that you, thank God for dinner. And that's okay. You know, like, I'm grateful that I see it, and I'm grateful I have a program for it now. Like, I don't have to stay in that. You know, I have a program for it. I can make an amends for it. And life goes on now. The world isn't over, and I don't have to pick up, right? That's not what happens, thank God. And, yeah. So I want to be a little mindful of my time, but let me see here. So, page 20, so then page 27 continues with these, you know, the rearrangements, right? Ideas, emotions, and attitudes, which were once the guiding forces of the lives of these men, are suddenly cast to one side, and a completely new set of conceptions and motives begins to dominate them. And that's the motives for me are God consciousness, right? And I can get a little loose with it. I can try to play God again pretty quickly. But if I, you know, continue to work with others, be with my fellows, be in this program, and lean into God, I'm going to be okay. I'm going to be okay. And page 28 says, a new life has been given us, or if you prefer, a design for living that really works. And that is true for me today. I have a design for living that really works. I try to, except for when I'm criticizing other people's prayers, I try to be God conscious. I try to be very deep in gratitude. When I realize that I'm playing God, I try to quickly remind myself who, in fact, is my higher power, not me. And when I want to feel free, all I need to remember is that God is everything or that God is nothing, and I make my choice, and I can make that choice all throughout the day, right? Like when I used to be on diets, right, it was every Monday, and if I blew my diet at 10 a.m. on Monday, which I often did, then forget it. Forget the week. Forget the whatever, you know, just screw it, right? But now I have a choice. I have a choice every minute. I have a choice every minute. To remember that God is everything. And there's always freedom and serenity that flows from that understanding, and to be right-sized. and I will also just briefly share, right, that I actually had another heart attack. Yes, I had a second heart attack last October. And that sucked, but, things are different, right? So I remember being in my hospital bed this time, and I was looking for God. I was praying, but I was super scared. And it was interesting because I felt alone. I did feel alone and scared. And yet on some other level, I really knew that I wasn't alone. And I knew that God was there. I kept praying and leaning into God, and fear kept taking over. You know, the fear was pretty overwhelming. And I know God was there, even though I was really, 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 really scared. And so what are the miracles that happened there, right? So I didn't lose my abstinence, and I didn't even consider it. Again, it's been removed. It's not a way I solve my problems or numb my feelings or anything I turn to anymore, and I'm not white knuckling. It doesn't even cross my mind, and I cannot take credit for it. It is a miracle that I have been rearranged by God, as the book says, right? And things are different now, you know, after this heart attack. I like to call it my cardiac episode because I don't want to call it a heart attack, but I can't work in the same capacity, in the same job that I once did. And, you know, I felt really sad and bummed out about that. And that's like an understatement. Like, it was my life's work, so to speak. It was what I went to school for. It was what I thought I was going to do forever. And I can't do it. And that was really devastating in a lot of ways. and also what a miracle it's been, because it's turned out to be just fine. And there are new joys and new opportunities and new experiences. And I don't mean to be like a Pollyanna, like, oh, everything is great all the time, because I'm not saying it is, but also it is. Also, everything is good all the time, all the times that I trust in my higher power. So I'm going to wrap up. I think I'm out of time. I would like to read, if I can have two more seconds to do so, from page 28. If what we have learned and felt and seen means anything at all, it means that all of us, whatever our race, creed, or color, are the children of a living creator with whom we may form a relationship upon simple and understandable terms as soon as we are willing and honest enough to try. And I just think that's so important. You know, we all are children of our creator, and we don't have to use the same words or same terms or same dogma to have a higher power that we rely on. And all we need to be is willing and honest enough to try to have a relationship with that higher power. And with that, I will pass, and thank you.
Katie, thanks so much. Just such an authentic and organic and very identifiable presentation.
That's from this out. Getting all these thoughts.
We have someone now. Someone that's unmuted as I'm thanking Katie for her presentation. There we go. But Katie, yes, thank you so much. We're so grateful for your time this morning. You did a terrific job. My obsessive mind starts going, you know, it's Katie B from New York, and I'm going to B words, and I'm thinking benevolence, and she's funny with banter. And then I finally came to bless. She's blessed, and she's blessed us this morning. So thank you, Katie. Okay, so we're going to transition to a question and answer segment at this point on questions only. But before we do, I'm going to give you the share ID for Katie's presentation. That number is 21,704. That's 21704. I'll give it again. Transition to a question and answer period. If you have a question for KDB, you're going to press star 1 to unmute your phone and give me your name. And questions only, please. Who would like to, who has a question for Katie?
Mary Lee R. in Oregon.
Mary Lee. And press star 1. Who else?
Tony B.
Tony B.
Alexis F.
Alexis. You guys are being really kind to me.
Deborah M.
Deborah. Anybody else?
Toby W. from Boston.
Hi, Toby. Gotcha. Okay, that's a little list here. We'll kind of see where we're at after we go through these. I have Mary Lee, Tony, Alexis, Deborah, followed by Toby. So if you're not Mary Lee, if you'd be kind enough to mute your phone so we have a clear line. Mary Lee, what question do you have? Good morning.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for everyone's service. Katie, what are some of the how do you access your higher power and create the roadblock between what your mind thinks and what's real? That make sense? Thanks.
Hi, it does make sense. It does make sense. My mind puts up lots of roadblocks, and I think I often need to question my first thought, right? And sometimes I don't, because it tells us that eventually, like, we'll get some intuitive thoughts that are from our higher power, and also sometimes I don't. So So how I access my higher power, well, I will first say that I have given up the expectation that by me accessing my higher power, that means that I will get a neon sign answer, because boy, do I get disappointed when that doesn't happen. And I was even in recovery, you know, I wanted an answer from God. I wanted it now. I wanted it to be clear to me, and I wanted it to be, you know, just really glaringly obvious what I should and shouldn't do, and be clear that it was from God. And I, in my experience, that has not been how, you know, I hear God. So I guess what I would say is the way I access my higher power is, first of all, through the steps, definitely through the steps. I'm just opening the book up right to 84, 85, 86, 80, you know, 87, when it talks about 10 steps and 11 steps, the 11th step rather. That is my first way that I can access God, is by following those directions for the 11th step in the morning and in the evening, the willingness to listen, and also through fellows. Again, not that, you know, not through like advice from fellows, but from hearing fellows share their experience, strength, and hope. Oftentimes, and sometimes advice, there's nothing wrong with that, but I feel like my higher power is often talking to me through other people, being willing to quietly listen for God, and I do that imperfectly, and I have, you know, I get easily distracted, and to-do lists pop up. But, you know, I have a little piece of paper next to me, and I write down those things that kind of fill my head, and I put them on paper, and I kind of empty out, and I try to be willing to listen. Different readings that I do, I like to do different readings, writing, sort of all the tools. I mean, I might just be like a, you know, kind of boring answer, but that's sort of what I do, and it works. And when I don't get what I want from God, well, I've let go of that expectation now. For the most part, I don't get the neon signs, and yet I have developed like a trust and being guided by my higher power, and I make plenty of foolish mistakes along the way. So that's what I would say. And also definitely working with others, not just as a sponsor, but just, you know, sharing this message and being on this road with others. Those are all ways that I feel that I access my higher power. I don't know if that's helpful or not, but that's sort of how I would answer it.
Thanks for the question, Mary Lee. Give your last initial and where you're from when you before your question. That would be terrific in case people want to find you. Next up, we have Tony B, followed by Alexis. Hi, Tony.
Hi, my name's Tony B, gratefully recovered in Scotland. Thank you so much, Katie. It was a wonderful presentation. And I wonder if you could talk a bit on this little sentence. The seventh step is where we make the change in our attitude. This is from the AA 12 and 12. The change in our attitude, which permits us with humility as our guide to move out from ourselves towards others and towards God. So could you talk a little bit about that attitude change and step seven being somewhere where we're able to do that in humility? Thank you.
Sure. Thank you, Tony. I just want to open up into, hang on 2 seconds. I don't have the 12 and 12 in front of me, so I tried to take a couple of. So the seventh step, right? Humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. And this change in attitude you mentioned from moving out from ourselves into others, is that right? Am I butchering it? Are you still there, Tony? I don't know if you muted again. All right, we'll wing it.
No, that's absolutely it.
That's it? Okay. Thank you, Tony. Okay.
I suppose I should just have asked you about your attitude change and how that happens and how that's continuing to happen.
Yes, okay, my attitude change. Thank you, Tony, for clarifying. My attitude change and how that happens and is continuing to happen. Okay, so I think when I was me-reliant, right, self-reliant, my attitude was I was pretty negative because I was relying on myself for things, and I was very fear-based because of that. I felt sort of scared and alone and floundering because I thought it was up to me to do all of these things in the world. And so I would say that my attitude was generally kind of negative and very fearful. And I'm still a fearful person, I think, by nature, right? But and when I experienced the freedom of the food obsession at first, which was all, I mean, I didn't even want that. I think I said I just wanted to be thin. When I got the freedom from the food obsession, when that was lifted, I couldn't imagine wanting anything else. Like, it was such a gift that I don't think I would have ever wanted anything more than that. Like, that is, like, beyond, right? And that really has been just the beginning. Like, so my attitude now is generally one that I'm open. Well, that's not true. My general, like, when it's just me, the first thing is I'm still sort of like self-centered and fearful and all those things. However, now, very quickly, usually if I'm, you know, if it's a good day, I can turn all of that over. And you know, we're in the big book, I think it's on 84 or 85, when it says we relax and take it easy. That is not me. I do not relax. I solve. I fix. I, you know, perseverate, whatever I do. But relaxing and taking it easy is not my default. And yet now, when I am trusting God, I am relaxing into God, and that attitude shift is huge for me. Because if I am, even if it's only for a second, and then I take the trust back, and then I give it back, and then whatever, but when I am trusting, I am relaxing in God, and that is quite an attitude shift, because I'm generally like more of an uptight kind of gal. The other thing I'll say also just about my attitude is my willingness to share about myself. This was my deepest shame. You know, being a compulsive eater was my deepest shame. And slowly, over the past 5 years, it's manifested itself differently, you know, at different times in my life. I didn't just, you know, go from black to white in one day. But I now share this with other people in my family, and not in like a preachy way, but I just share about myself like the book tells us to. I tell them I'm in a 12-step program. I share it with people all the time now because I try not to be pushy, but I want to, my attitude now is not only, you know, one of openness and willingness, but also that I really pray that other people can hear this because it's such a miracle and I want to share it. So that's another huge attitude shift, is the willingness to be open about myself and something that was once really shameful and embarrassing. And tell other people about it when I feel it's appropriate. So that's sort of how I would answer that question, Tony. Thank you. I hope I answered your question.
Thanks, Tony. Okay, next up we have Alexis with the question, followed by Deborah. Good morning, Alexis.
Katie. You
Hi,
mentioned
Alexis.
Choice. Hi. You mentioned choice. Is choice, do you think, a consent of the will or the grace to carry out God's will? And if it's the grace, do you have to wait for it?
Thanks, Alexis. I don't know that I'm qualified to answer that. That's a heavy question, a good question. I guess, like which came first? Like, in some way, did my higher power enter into my life in a way that I was finally willing to make certain choices, or was I just finally willing to make certain choices and I get the credit, but I get to say that. And I don't know that I know the answer to that. I do know this, right? So, okay. I was in a therapist's office right before I came into program this time, and no offense to I love therapists, whatever, it's fine, but she looked at me after I told her all my problems with food, and she said, oh, this is easy. She said, all you have to do is eat anything you want in moderation. Like, I was like, oh, that's all I have to do is eat everything in moderate. Oh, why didn't I think of that, right? And she's a lovely woman, and I'm sure she's a very good therapist. She wasn't the therapist for me for this moment in my life, right? Or maybe she was. Maybe she was the therapist for me in that moment. But when I heard that, right, I knew the truth about myself, and I think I had known it over the years. Every time I kind of crawled into OA, and then I kind of slinked back out after the dieting with group support hadn't worked, and, you know, I went back out again heavier than before. But when she said that, the truth came through me, which was, Katie, that's not true for you. And Katie, that's moderation for you is not the goal. And I don't know if that was God saying that or what, I don't know. But in that moment, I started to become willing to be open-minded enough to at least come back to OA. And when I went back to OA and I started being so is that willingness a choice? I don't know. But as I listened and I read the pamphlets and I read the big book, right, as I did those things, was I willing to make a choice one day at a time to keep going forward? And, like, it's so hard to say, right, because, like, the choice to be abstinent or not, or that, like, I don't want to pretend like being abstinent, oh, just make a choice. It's so easy. Keep your food down, you know. And also, you know, I do have to take some responsibility for certain things, right? Like, sometimes I felt like I was on autopilot when I would be, you know, overeating or going to buy certain foods, and it did feel completely out of my control. But sometimes, if I'm being honest, I knew that I was going to be doing that, you know, minutes, hours, or days before I went ahead and did it. And in those moments, did I have a choice, right? Did I have a choice to call somebody? Did I have a choice to get on my knees and pray? And I'm not saying that these things would stop it. I'm just, there are choices that I, you know, make, that we make. So I think it's a hard question, and I don't want to, like, but for when she said that moderation, and then when I started reading the doctor's opinion, and I realized that there were certainly certain foods that, if I was being honest, if I was being really honest, I could not safely eat, no matter what. I had a choice one day at a time, you know, to say, at least to be willing that I wasn't going to pick them up. And I had a choice one day at a time to try to work my program. So I think those are choices. Are they, it's a very deep question that I'm not deep enough to answer, if it's grace that gave me the ability to make that choice or not, because there were so many times over the years that I really, 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 really wanted it, and I wasn't picking up, and I don't want to say that that's someone's fault, right? Because, oh, you didn't choose it. It's nuanced, and it's too sophisticated for me. But there are choices that I can and do take responsibility for. So I don't know if that's an answer, not answer, but that's all I got, Alexis. Thanks.
Makes sense to me. Okay, thanks for the question, Alexis. And next up we have Deborah, followed by Toby. Deborah, good morning.
Good morning. Oh my gosh, I think all my questions actually have been answered. And you gave just wonderful details, simple instructions, but leaving it totally up to God. So thank you. I will pass.
Thanks, Deborah.
Yeah, thank you, Deborah. Okay, Toby, how about you? Good morning.
Good morning. It's Toby W. from Boston. And I'm going to say ditto to the person before me, because you were amazing, absolutely amazing. And somebody asked the question that I would have asked. So with that, I pass.
Thank you, Toby.
Look at how thorough she is. So we appreciate it. Okay, who else has a question that's already been answered? Press star one if you have a question for Katie V. Good morning. Anybody? Mueller?
Melissa G. Hey, this is Maureen.
Melissa? Maureen.
Krista S.
Gotcha. Is that Krista?
Krista S. Yes.
Krista. Okay. Got Melissa, Maureen, Krista. Who else? Anybody?
Hello?
Hanayeta. Okay, Hanayeta. We'll see if how this all plays out here. Yeah, let's see. We have Melissa, Maureen, Krista, and Hanayeta. Let's see where we're at there. Let's start, if you can mute your phone if you're not Melissa. Melissa, good morning to you.
Good morning. This is Melissa G. Actually, my questions were all answered also, but I had another one, which was when your husband was saying grace his own way and it was bothering you, didn't like it, how did you handle that? Was there something you said that you had to go back and apologize, and how does that work? Or how did you catch yourself? And that's my question. Thank you for your beautiful share. I loved it.
Thank you, Melissa, my friend. Thank you. I opened my mouth and I said it. So there I am, selfish, self-centered, right, trying to rule the world. So it's me and him and the two kids, and he says it, and something is missing, in my opinion. And I blurted it out. And I said, oh, you forgot, don't you want to, blah, blah, blah. And I tried to correct his prayer. I corrected it. And right as it was, and why? Why did I do that? Well, the book says if we're agitated or doubtful, right, what do? Well, we don't open our mouths and say whatever's on our mind. That's not what the book says. And so I am often agitated and doubtful. And I guess by agitated, I use that. I apply that to mean like anything, a little angsty, any ruffle, anything, right? That's my cue to turn to God. And I often miss my cue, I guess you could say. So I felt it, and I immediately opened my mouth, and then I had to, there you go, Katie. So I had to apologize. I chose to, right? There's a choice. I sat with it. And then I apologized to him and to our children because I owed an apology. I should not have been critical of that. So there's the program in action. And what's the takeaway? Well, I get to share it with all of you and hope maybe you'll, hear my experience, strength, and hope, and maybe that will help, right? And for myself too, right? Like I've heard people say the prayer, right? Like, I'm going to butcher it, but, higher power, keep one hand over my mouth and one on my shoulder, right? Like, take that breath, Katie. Take that pause. And I love the other one, right? A closed mouth gathers no foot. So I often put my foot in my mouth, and thank you, God, for this program, though. I don't have to hate myself over it. I can apologize. I can be prayerful about it. I can write about it. I can share about it, and I will hopefully not do that again. So that's my answer. Thank you, Melissa.
Thanks so much. Okay, Maureen, it's your turn, followed by Krista. Good morning to you.
Hi, it's Maureen. I'm recovering compulsive overeater, going through the last few chapters with my sponsor in the big book. I would like to ask Katie, being a nurse, I know you have you're susceptible to genetic heart disease. I would like to know how much weight you lost and what your EF is and if you had a lot of damage to your heart. And I'll pass. Thank you.
Sure. I don't know what my ejection fraction is. I know it's good. How's that for not being a well-informed patient? I have maintained just about just under 60-pound weight loss for the past 5 years. And the damage to my heart. My first heart attack, there was scar tissue from it and damage. And then this last one, hopefully the last one, if you're a nurse, you'll know what this means. Was something called an NSTEMI, which is like a less serious one without any damage to the heart at all. Thank you, God. So those are my answers to that, Maureen. And I should know my EF, and I don't.
And which ventricle and right, we want to know the whole deal. Okay, thanks, Maureen. Krista, you're up next by Hanayeta. After that will be Hanayeta. Krista or Krista?
Hi, this is Krista S. from Chicago. Thank you so much for your share. I missed the first part, and I don't know if you already addressed this. How did you know what your abstinence, your physical abstinence was going to look like. And then how did you get through the first 30 days of abstinence? For me, they've been kind of hellish to the point where I can't get a few days together. So thank you so much.
Sure. Thanks, Krista. I don't think I addressed this. I say a lot. I might have, but I don't think I did. So thank you for the question. So how did I know what my physical abstinence was going to be? So going through the doctor's opinion, I think, and also the OA 12 and 12, and then also some other resources that nothing fancy, you know, the other questions, I should say, not resources, questions that my sponsor at the time posed to me, I was able to, at least for the beginning, subject to change, right, but create a list of foods that I absolutely knew I could not safely eat in any amount. I also chose to weigh and measure, to weigh and measure the foods that I can safely eat, because for me, that shuts down a lot of noise and chatter in my head. Did I eat too much? Did I eat too little? Should I have a little more? Should I, you know, it just shuts it down. So I don't, by the way, I don't count calories at all. That's, I'm not on a diet. But I do have a certain amount of food that a professional has reviewed and said is healthy for me. And that's what I choose to do because, again, it really shuts down all that noise. And I have so much freedom with that boundary of weighing and measuring and knowing, nope, that food is just not for me. It's non-negotiable, right? Whatever that food may be. And there are many, and there are also many delicious foods that I can eat. I really enjoy what I eat, and I like my food, and I like eating, right? Of course I do, right? I'm a compulsive eater. I like eating. But but with those guidelines, and again, the non-negotiables or whatever, you know, red light foods, whatever you want to call them, when it's a clear yes or a clear no, it shuts down that chatter in my voice that tells me, oh, you can have one. You can try it. No, I can't. There's no negotiating. So that was really helpful in the beginning as well. And the 30 days, right? So it was hard. I'm not going to pretend that it was easy, because it wasn't. And I think over the year, I usually left pretty soon after I would enter OA, but I think I've gotten 30 days before, right? Or I successfully dieted for 30 days or whatever. It got harder and harder, I found, as I got older. But what did I do for the first 30 days? And it might have actually been longer for me. I was uncomfortable. I would eat my three meals, and in the beginning, I would eat my first meal, and I would look at the clock, and I would just wait until the second meal. And the second meal, same thing till the third, and when I hit that third meal, sometimes, if the opportunity was there, I would call it a night. I'm done. I gotta go. I have to go into my room now, and I have to not come out, because I'm gonna eat. That's what it was like. So I don't want to, you know, I don't want to give any misconception that this was like easy for me, because it wasn't. It was really uncomfortable. I thought about food all the time. I couldn't wait for my next meal. And I will also tell you that when I would get into bed at the end of that night, I would lay down, I would close my eyes and be like, thank you. I'm waking up abstinent. I'm waking up abstinent. And wow. It felt good. But then the next morning when I woke up abstinent, I would do the same thing. I would think about lunch during breakfast. I would think about dinner during lunch. Like, it wasn't comfortable. So I just sort of want to share that with you, that I did not like it, and I was not comfortable. And any time I could, I would just go right to bed after dinner, which wasn't often, but I would try. I'd brush my teeth. I wear like a bite plate. I'd put my night guard in. I would do anything that I could do to physically stop myself from picking something up. And then the food thoughts came. I think it's Dr. Bob's nightmare. I think he says alcoholic thoughts or cravings for like 2.5 years. So when I read that, I was like, okay, I'm in good company. One of the founders of AA had that too. and the food would call. So again, I don't want to make it seem like it was easy. But I would pick up the phone, or I would make a phone call, write, read. And in the beginning, it really was meal to meal. And that's how I got through, I think, my first 30 days, and maybe it lessened, but it kept going for a while. So that's how I would answer that, Krista. Thanks for your question.
Yeah, thanks, Krista. Okay, so we'll take our final question. And Hanayeta, we do need your last initial. Someone's looking for you. There's like 50 Hanayetas on the list. So we want to make sure.
Not.
Good morning.
I am Hanayeta R. And it's Chanayeta R from Texas. The only one there. thank you. My original question was the one about your husband, because I just do it all the time. I just did it yesterday. So, but my other question is, because I have many diseases inside my body also, not just my heart. Well, anyway, that's not about me. Question. Do you go to a dietitian, a food person, I guess it's just a dietitian or a nutritionist for your food plan, or where did you get it?
Okay, thank you, Hanayeta. And also, I just back to Chris's question. I hope that didn't sound too miserable about the how it was so miserable, but I'm just being honest. It was uncomfortable, and not every day, and not every second of every day. But, I'm harping on the negative parts of it. So I just wanted to put that out there. There were also times in my first 30 days that I was, happy and enjoying life. It wasn't pure misery, but it was definitely uncomfortable is what I kind of want to say. I don't mean to make it sound that awful. But I didn't like it. How about that? And to the question about the dietitian and food plan, so in the beginning, I picked a food plan from a pamphlet. That's what I did. When I came to the conclusion that I needed a food plan, I picked one out of, I think it might have been called Dignity of Choice at the time. I think they've changed the pamphlet. I don't know the name. It's one of the OA pamphlets. I feel bad that I don't remember it right now, but I just picked one out of there, and I ate from it. And at first, I was like, "This is too much food. I'm never gonna lose weight with it." And I just sort of said, "You know what? Let's just try this," because I was always wanting like a quick fix, and I wanted to lose X amount of weight in X amount of time. And I was like, "Nope, we're not doing that, Katie, because your way isn't working, right?" And so I just picked one out of there. And I am telling you, it worked. It's a great, and I still basically eat off of that food plan. A little while into eating like that, I did see a nutritionist because I just wanted to run it past somebody. So I did bring the nutritionist or the dietitian that plan, and I said, "This is what I'm eating. Is this okay for me?" Based on, certain things, like certain carbs aren't really great for me and my heart, for example. So I wanted to just make sure it was okay, and that's what I did. And I went to her, and she looked at it, and she said, "Fine," and that's what I've been doing. So that's how I would answer that question. But, yeah, I just picked one right out of the book, and it worked for me with, eventually a slight tweaking after I saw a professional. Thank you.
Oh, thanks, Hanayeta. Okay, well, that's a wrap. Let's wrap it up. And oh, my gosh, Katie, that was so beautiful. Thank you so much for your generous offer of your time for service this morning. And stick around as we wrap, you bet, as we wrap up the meeting, we'll ask Katie for her contact information once we stop the recording here. So. Okay, so we are going to close with a reading from page 164 in the big book in the chapter entitled A Vision for You. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road to happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until